The DeFalco Files is an entertainment-based program. Some memories of certain events might be fuzzy. All opinions are that of the host. Content might not be appropriate for children and some adults. Listener discretion is advised. And remember, the truth is here. Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting presents The DeFalco Files with FSW owner Joe DeFalco and your host, Matt Michaels.
Hey everybody, it's Matt Michaels here along with Joe DeFalco, the owner and founder of FSW, Future Stars of Wrestling here in Las Vegas. It's The DeFalco Files. Joe, how you doing this lovely, lovely new March day?
You know, it's funny. It's just, you know, one thing after another. You know, as we get closer to the light at the end of the tunnel, it just seems to get further and further away, you know. So, unfortunately, we did another one of our invite-only birthday party-type shows. And after it was over, great show, by the way. And, you know, we limited social distance, temperature checks at the thing. But because of the physical contact, it was termed technically not legal to do. So we got a citation. We got a warning. And after that, I kind of read up every little, you know, detail about the guidelines and all the other stuff. And, you know, according to the Nevada guidelines on March 15th, sporting events and live entertainment is allowed to resume with fans there. Now, the problem is they have a distance rule, which makes it extremely difficult, as well as it's 50% capacity. So we were looking forward to doing our first, I guess you could say, big event at the school, to where we put 100 people in, and, you know, we've set things up. Every title was going to be on the line. We were going to have a cash in the case ladder match. So it was going to be a pretty big deal. You know, we crowned the new number one contender in Hammerstone. So we're setting up good stuff. And unfortunately, we got to sit around and wait. It even affects training, where they're like, oh, no physical contact. It's like, you're going to tell me every MMA gym, every jiu-jitsu, every boxing, guys aren't sparring, guys aren't wrestling around. And it's like, you know, taking all these businesses and either not allowing them to function, but we still got to pay all the rent. We got to pay the bills. You know, we're trying to concentrate more in the training, at least for the next couple weeks. You know, character development, promos, tape study, you know, things that can be done. Individual stuff is okay. You know, you could roll around in the ring, but God forbid you're 3 feet away from somebody.
Yeah.
You know, really lock up so you can run the ropes. You could be on the outside and do your squats. So, you know, there's a lot of things. In all honesty, our beginners get pushed pretty quickly. In a lot of places, that's all they'd be doing for the first couple months.
So. Right. That's true. You know, with something like that, you know, happening, my initial thoughts were, like, why after the show? Like, how the hell does that happen where you can run a whole show and then get told, well, you can't do shows?
I can't tell you when he showed up. Maybe he sat in the bleachers and enjoyed the show, but it's supposed to be invite only, so I don't know how he would have gotten in. You know, the bottom line is the only reason that anything happened was because somebody made a call to OSHA, and we had talked with them, and we thought everything was okay. So unless it's either somebody made another call that just wants to continually – you know, fuck with us, which, you know, I have opinions on, you know, who it might be. But it also might be a continuation of the email and phone call I got from them a few weeks ago, that they seemed to be okay with what we were doing. And I explained stuff and they were like, hey, what are you, and blah, blah, blah. And with the training, I sent pictures and I said, we run, you know, stuff for family and friends. And he didn't say, oh, was there contact in that? You know, right. I answered every question that he gave me truthfully. I have an email that I told him, you know, we run with family and friends. So what would you think we did with family and friends? They sat and watched the guy do a roll. You know what I mean? It's like a wrestling school. You know, we told you what we did. You say, oh, you know, by the way, you can't have it even if it's for a birthday party or if it's only for family and friends.
Yeah.
So, you know, did what we thought was okay. You know, there's other people in town that were doing stuff in a mall, you know, and they haven't run in a little while either. It's been the same guidelines, you know, since things reopened again in June or July,
right?
To where, you know, it's a very gray area of what you can do, what you can't do. And, you know, like I said, with the strip clubs, it's a bikini bar, but it's not.
Yeah.
And everybody knows it. So, and it's like, I'm not a rat, and I'm not going to be like, hey, but what about the other place?
Right.
You know, I know a place, events, and not one time do they, well, it's more training and stuff like that. And it's some wrestling stuff. And there's not one person who even like wears a mask around their neck.
Yeah.
Like they just walk in and they do their thing. It's like, we try to follow as much of the guidelines as we possibly can. And nobody else I know of in the business has been, you know, even looked at.
Yeah, what's fascinating to me is the fact that you can have, like, again, a Walmart or a restaurant or a bar. And the fact of the matter is there's so much more of a high concentrate of people, especially in restaurants, you're taking off your mask and eating. With this, if you have two wrestlers having physical contact, they're essentially, I mean, they're testing. They, you know, if they weren't feeling good, they wouldn't be there. So it just blows my mind that this is now the excuse when you have fans who are masked up. I mean, yeah, I don't understand because whether you're 25 feet or 10 feet or right next to someone, you know, if it just happens that this is a virus that has non-symptoms, you can be asymptomatic. So, you know, how much can you control everyone? You know, outside of just following the general guidelines, it's like you, I don't know, man. It's frustrating as hell. And I can only imagine the headaches that you guys are going through.
Well, the thing is, for a year, we've heard 6 feet social distance, six feet social distance. Oh, you're doing an event? Okay, we're going to let you do it. But now you got to be 25 feet.
Right.
Well, supposedly, it's 6 feet that, you know, it could travel. Well, if you have a mask on, it's supposed to be helpful. I understand the two guys in the ring, but you're telling me 12 feet away isn't sufficient?
Yeah.
Oh, if you want to go 10 feet, awesome. We'll figure out a way. We'll eliminate the side rows and, you know, we'll still do 60 people instead. But it's like to just basically, you know, tell me that I can't run my business, but I still need to make sure all the bills are paid.
Right.
Before, you know, and get kicked out. It's like, how do you know, I don't get it. Like a lot of these companies that are in business, you know, have a ton of money, ton of capital, but they're losing a lot of it. I can't see how any major company, you know, other than Walmart and Costco,
right,
and the grocery, and you know, Cheesecake Factory and you know, the casinos, you know, the only reason the casinos aren't doing well is because people aren't coming to Vegas the way they used to.
Right.
You know, go to Sunset Station, the local casinos, and they, you know, be quiet. Well, the local casinos are still pretty full. I go to Sunset Station and there's people there.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and again, they don't wear a mask. They don't, you know, they smoke, they drink.
Yeah.
The entire time. Like, I had my thing, it was like right up to here. And, you know, because it slips down or whatever. And like, all of a sudden, within a minute, like, sir, you need to get that mask all the way up. And it's like, there's 100 people without their masks even up to here because they're drinking and they're smoking. Mine slipped down 2 inches.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's amazing because if the guidelines are the guidelines, that's great. But the guidelines can't be different for every single different business. Okay, for this business, it's that. But for that business, it's that. And, well, the bar can be open, but, like, what's the difference if food is served at the bar or not?
Right.
Like, it matters. So I could drink at the bar and not have a mask on, but God forbid I eat at the bar and have a hamburger. Like, what's the difference? I can just go 5 feet across the way and sit somewhere, you know? And, you know, the one thing is I don't really want to make this all political because people are going to tune out and be like, ah, who gives a fuck?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But it's just a frustrating situation where every time we're looking like we're going to set up for something major to happen, you know,
right.
Oh, there it goes. Something else has gotten in the way.
Yeah. And I, this past week, I had to do some work on the strip. And amazingly enough, like, it was like walking into the strip prior to the shutdown. There were so many people. Like, I was at Excalibur. I have not seen Excalibur this busy since last year, beginning of the year. And it blows my mind because people aren't coming, but now apparently they are coming. And with that, it just seems like they're doing what they can do, but at the same time, like you said, as I looked around, it's everyone is, you know, either smoking or has a drink. And the ones that get me are the ones who have to take the mask down to talk on their phone. And I've yet to see someone in the casino approach them for talking on their phone even. So it's just so strange how every company is dealing with it differently. Let me ask you this, just out of curiosity, as a small business, would you have or do you qualify for the payment protection plan or whatever it's actually called, the PPP, I think it is?
Yeah, I looked into it, but because of the small profit margins, they're not going to give us a loan because, you know, a lot of money wasn't made to begin with.
Wow.
And it depends on the employees, and being that it's an LLC, they, you know, technically I'm the only employee. So,
wow. You know. Wow. That's interesting. I didn't even think of that perspective. So let's get into a better note, and that is, what actually happened Saturday with the card itself, and what kind of surprises, and how much can fans expect, you know, once you are going forward here in a couple of weeks from the Night of Champions, and are there surprises in the work, and boy, oh boy, is it something that they need to get the network now? Because I'm telling you, there's some good shit going on, man.
You know, again, we were setting up a lot of things for what we thought would be, at least for now, what we would call a super show. And, you know, Graves has kind of been beaten up, you know, a lot of great talent. You know, he beat a Remy Marcel, you know, and, you know, he's beaten some good people.
Yeah.
But we hadn't really set up like, hey, who's the number one contender, you know, and we have guys there that, you know, a Hero Lou, Funny Bone, Sepha, and Hammerstone. And unfortunately, Sepha was unable to make it, so the four-way became a three-way. But it was three top guys that, even if it didn't matter if it was three or the four, nobody would be able to predict who they thought could win. Everybody would have an idea like, hey, Hero might be the long shot because he's that young up-and-coming superstar, but he is the young up-and-coming superstar,
right?
You know? And Funny Bone, you know, was in good position to win. Ice Williams got involved, which, you know, sets their match.
Right.
You know, that we are going to come up with a not a straightforward wrestling match. So we're going to try to come up with something innovative, creative, you know, just a lot of fun. You know, Funny Bone, you know, has a lot of ideas you know, what kind of match he'd like to get with Ice Williams. So that kind of set the tone. Hammerstone winning the match, who's a two-time former champion, No Limit, you know, tag team champion and Nevada State champion. He's looking to be the first ever three-time FSW heavyweight champion. Now, those guys, you know, I guess it's a love, hate, love relationship. You know, they were best friends for a long time. Things changed, and now they've been on the same page for almost 2 years.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to see that matchup. And, you know, it looks like things are set with the Unguided against Shogun and Kenny. And, you know, the only thing we really have left with is the women's champion. And, you know, who she's going to take on. You know, Sandra Moon is definitely, you know, in line after the four-way elimination match, but she's also got her issues with Strella. And then, of course, there's the Nevada State Championship.
Right.
And, you know, obviously both guys are chomping at the bit, hyper streak, you know, a man who has never won a title. And then a guy like Remy Marcel, who a guy like Hyper Streak feels that Remy's been given way too much in FSW while he's been kind of, you know, left beside.
Yeah.
So, you know, we got that. And then a few weeks back, we talked about how Eli Everfly and Hyperstreak had one of the best matches we've seen in the FSW arena. Well, you know, I advise you to check out the network and a guy that we said, whether it's singles or tag teams, Jay Vidal and Eli Everfly, they destroyed it,
yeah.
You know, on Saturday night. And, you know, Jay Vidal, you know, might be being held back in the tag team division. He is so good as a singles wrestler that, you know, he could easily be the No Limits champion. And we were actually, when we were going to do an episode of Future Shock beforehand, was going to actually have Jay Vidal against Ice Williams.
Ooh.
And see if how good that match could be. And then we were talking about the cash in the case, and we were looking at having some qualifiers on the 13th because we have so much of this talent. And, you know, Brandon Gatson was available, and Wise Guy, and Eli Everfly, and a guy like Class. And it was like trying to put together, being the titles that we have, instead of just doing it for the No Limits, we revert back into the time where you can cash in on any single championship you want.
Right.
You know, and, you know, those were the plans. But now we just may have to pick the six guys based on what they've done recently, you know, and Class, you know, the show was great from top to bottom. You know, Class and Dave Mazzani was awesome. The Loudest Mouth and the shortest tenure in FSW, Brett the Threat, him and Rocky T are having some major issues.
Yeah, yeah. What is going on, man? That promo that Rocky cut on him, I think it was the other day, was, wow, damn.
Well, you know, Brett has made it abundantly clear that he feels, you know, he's as young as he is, you know, he's better than being in the six-man tag. You know, he and what happened was he hit me up and said, hey, you know, I want a match. And I'm like, well, there is no match. Sorry. And then I guess he hit up Rocky and Rocky said, oh, yeah, we'll see what we can do. And then he called me up and Funny Bone was available. So we kind of set him up to where, okay, be careful what you wish for type of thing. You know, you want to talk about, you know, I call him, you know, Conor McGregor light, you know, he's exactly like Conor McGregor. He does so much talking and then he loses, you know, like at least if you won, you know, you can get more, you know, more juice, you know, people can take you more seriously. So, you know, we hit a Funny Bone and said, hey, there's this young kid who is getting a little out of hand and he thinks that he's far bigger than he is. You want to come down and beat his ass? And Funny Bone, you don't have to ask twice about beating somebody's ass. So, you know, but Brett the Threat just thought like Funny Bone showed up out of nowhere and came out instead of, you know, we placed him there. But giving Brett the Threat credit, you know, he held his own with Funny Bone and he did very well against him. But again, you know, maybe in 2 years or a year and a half, the it'd be a different outcome.
Right.
But now, you know, he's had great opportunities. I don't know what he's talking about. You know, he's gotten to wrestle Remy Marcel. He got to wrestle Hyperstreak. He got to wrestle Mizani. So he's wrestled four, you know, pretty top talented guys in FSW. You know, him and the Suavecitos probably hang out together talking about how great they are with their win-loss record of 2-43.
I'm just waiting for them to walk in one day with their own three-man tag belts.
Yeah, you know, I could see them hanging out and talking about how FSW is holding them back.
You know, you brought up Eli Everfly and his match with Jay. You know, is it safe to say that sometimes when you get a talent like Eli, when he's on top of his game, it just really ups whoever he's in the ring with to step up their game because they both look like fucking $1 million. Is that important where you have guys like him who are able to come in and, you know, really give a match that is a lot of give and take?
Well, see, the thing with Eli is, you know, we know how talented he is. You know, a few years ago, Jacob Austin Young was the No Limits champion and they had a fantastic match, you know, inside the FSW arena. He got busy for a while and things just didn't, you know, match up to where we can use him. And as we talk about with the school and trying to get Nick Xander and Brett the Threat and, you know, Brandon G and all these younger guys on the show, you know, being that it's at the school, you know, we're trying to keep budget down.
Right.
And not that these guys are crazy priced. They're very fair. You know, they want to come to FSW, but a lot of times there just isn't a spot available, you know, for a match like that, because you just don't want to bring them in and it's like, okay, you know, put over this young kid who you're 100 times better than. I've never been that guy. I will never do that.
Right.
So a guy like Eli, a guy like Brandon Gatson, a guy like Wise Guy, a guy like Jordan Cruz, a guy like Class, you know, those guys, we want to be mainstays in FSW.
Right.
You know, we had a, you know, we had Eli booked for the 13th and the 27th. You know, we had Gatson come in on the 13th. We had one of the Samoan guys from Knox Pro, Juicy's partner. He was coming in on the 27th. And we were looking to, you know, just do some big things. And unfortunately, with what's going on, we can't. But we're looking for the bigger shows to, you know, dog won't stop. It's like he's hit the whole time. And I love my dog and all, but shut up. So it's like all these people that we got, you know, the new talent initiative. MK made an appearance after the main event and offered Hammerstone his services because, you know, Hammerstone really needs help to progress to the next level. And MK got a little touchy-feely with Hammerstone, and he got taken out. So, you know, knowing MK, you know, that isn't over either.
Yeah.
So, you know, we've put – there's a lot of stories in place to where are we going to go next. Now we just need to go next.
You know, you just mentioned Knox Pro, and this past week – came out that Bow Wow is going to be training with Knox Pro.
Well, he better start moving because he's beefing with Chris Bay on Twitter and talking a lot of trash. And I said it was, I talked to some people recently, and it's like, I think he's just overly trying to be a heel. So he's just trying to piss people off and doesn't understand, you know, when to work and when to be real.
Yeah,
you know, still, you know, he sees Bad Bunny walk in and get all this success. And it's like, you know, it's kind of like I saw Orton go off on one of the rapper guys today.
Yeah, I forgot who it was.
Soulja Boy, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, I think you're right.
And, you know, the one thing about wrestlers, when you say fake and, you know, and you don't show any respect, then it becomes an issue. And from what I've heard, Bad Bunny has been unbelievably respectful of everything that's gone on, and that's why he's a part of it.
Right.
And, you know, and no offense to Bow Wow, because he's got way more followers than most people, but, you know, Chris Bay did make an interesting point. The guy's got a few million followers, and on his pinned tweet, he's only got like 14,000 views.
True.
So, you know, his relevancy was 10, 15 years ago.
Right.
He really, you know, there's no denying that he hasn't done a lot in the last 5 or 10 years, you know, that I'm aware of. You know, I'm a DJ. You know, I was a DJ up until very, very recently. And, you know, I don't remember playing any Bow Wow songs in the last 5 years that were like, oh, this, as Danny from the Suavecitos would say, oh, this one's a real banger.
Well, that, you know, hopefully if Bow Wow keeps yapping.
And he will learn respect at Rikishi's school, so that's
true.
That's a good thing there.
But it would be wonderful to see you know, the timing of casino shows maybe coming back, Chris Bay being in Vegas maybe.
Versus Bow Wow, we have the relationship with Rikishi.
Yeah, that wouldn't be too bad, man.
We could do Rocky T and Chris Bay versus Rikishi and Bow Wow, you know?
You know, I think it's worth...
Pay good money to see Rocky T get this.
I was just going to say, it's worth at least 50 to 100 right there, man.
Yeah, at least.
Oh, man. You know, this past week on NXT, we got to see some really great work from the FSW crew. LA Knight is, boy, is Sean is killing it on his promos. I mean,
well, he always did. He did when he was, it was like when he hit me up, I always said from day one, it was like we saw him as a guy that was going to be a major league superstar. And then, you know, things happened. He got signed. It didn't work out. He went to Impact, got to become the world champion, which we're like, oh, this is great. And then all of a sudden they took the belt off him, you know, in a 30-second match with Aries because he was coming back. And Austin's very persuasive when it comes to ideas of how the match should go. But, you know, kudos. He put over Hammerstone in Texas for a championship the other day.
Yeah.
So, and I actually, it's crazy because I saw him like 2 days before. He's actually moved out of Vegas and he was at Sprouts which I've run into him, like, it's amazing. I've run into the dude like three times at Sprouts saying that, he sold his house, he was doing some things. And in 2 days, it was like his first match in more than a year. Like the first time he's been in a wrestling atmosphere was at the Mecca,
right?
When he was in it. And that was in March 15th.
Yeah.
So 13th, whatever the date was. But yeah, with Ricker, because I still call him Sean Ricker to this day. Oh, yeah. And that's his real name, too. So, which is crazy enough. But yeah, the promo ability was always, off the roof. But if you don't think that he can wrestle, buy the FSW network and you could check out Sean Ricker and Roderick Strong. Yeah. Good stuff. Sean can work with bigger guys like Tyshawn. He was able to work guys like Remy and Kenny King. And, he's extremely talented. The biggest surprise to me is Ryan Taylor. I just always thought he was one of the best talents out there. But, promo-wise, character-wise, it was a little more difficult. And in the world of WWE, everything, most cases, is based on, that big boy persona and the thing. But they've shown that they are, especially in NXT, they know how to be successful and make successful guys that aren't big talkers.
Yeah.
Timothy Thatcher, here's a guy who can out wrestle anybody, but they found a way to make him, a top guy.
Yeah.
Even Matt Riddle, he has his kind of charisma and the way he talks about him, but those guys kind of got to where they are because of their wrestling ability, which, as we know, is usually very rare.
Yeah.
Usually the wrestling ability isn't what's going to, put you in the best position.
Right. And speaking of the wrestling ability, boy, did Zoe Stark, formerly Lacey Ryan, did she not just fucking shine in that match? And they protected her as well. And boy.
Yeah, I'm going to be 100% honest. I was extremely disappointed.
Really?
Early on, they kind of got really lost. And they kind of caught it back, but it was just like we were sitting in the office watching it, and there was just some miscommunications that was kind of like, ouch, And later on, things picked up and everything, but it wasn't the effort has anything to do with it. Obviously, right. The effort's there. Maybe there's a little bit of the nerves,
right?
It's one thing where you're going to walk in and you're going to dominate this unsigned talent and we're going to showcase you. And then all of a sudden you're with the company for less than 3 weeks. And it's like, oh, you're going to be working the women's champion who's universally regarded as one of the best out there.
Yeah.
So, I say, I'd really look forward to the rematch. I know she would do a whole lot better. And I know if you asked her today about that match, I guarantee you she's going to say that she wasn't happy with it.
Yeah. But in the end, like you said, the second half of that match, and especially the end where you got, to see a handshake type moment, that was really just, again, surprising because, like you said, I can't think of anyone recently that's kind of been, that quickly in such a high profile match, that people.
Well, I was surprised. I think they gave Shotzi a pretty good push early on that I thought she was another one that they were going to let work through the system.
Yeah.
Like I guess with Cross, he was big time in Impact and AAA.
Right.
And he has that aura about him, which, again, isn't the wrestling ability. It's the aura about him that makes him must-see TV. And, as good as Lacey is, her wrestling by far is the strong points.
Yeah.
And she can go with anybody, male or female.
Yeah.
But her struggles usually come when it's time for promos and character development and stuff like that. So I thought somebody like her, somebody like Ryan Taylor, they'd kind of put him through the system, you know, train a bit, work on some stuff, and then try to bring him out. But it was like, even with Taylor and Lacey, they've come, you know, shooting right out of the gate.
Yeah.
And, you know, made them forces to be reckoned with, which is awesome.
Yeah.
But now it's, you also got to realize it's on the job training.
Yeah.
Because WWE wants things done the way they want things done. So the stuff Lacey may do on my show where it's like, yeah, do whatever you want, just have a cool match.
Yeah.
That isn't how it works when the agent's discussing what they need to do, because if Lacey's in match two or three, you know, and the main event's going to be this barn burner match, well, they may not want her to do certain things.
Right.
You know, kind of always like we would talk in WWE about the high flyers. Like, they always had the one guy. Like, Rey Mysterio was the one who was able to do a lot of cool stuff. And then when Rey Mysterio got hurt, Evan Bourne became the guy, Matt Sydal, who all of a sudden got over as the top smaller guy flying around feuding with everybody.
Right.
But before then, you know, he was limited to what he could do. And it'd be like, oh, okay, look at the moonsault. Oh, great. His finishing moves, fantastic, shooting star, whatever. And watching them on the indies when Evan Bourne was Matt Sydal working on our shows, it was like, wow, like Apollo Crews. He could do so much more.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and it's like, it's amazing. He's probably been there 3-4 years now, and it seems like now you're trying to let him do a little bit more as this big, agile guy who, despite his size, can do some really cool stuff.
Yeah.
Well, maybe he got over more if he did that 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Because he struggled because, again, his promos were not his strong suit. So in the WWE world, you know, they want you to they want personalities,
right?
You know, it's the personalities that shine. You know, not everybody could be a Jeff Hardy, but because of Jeff's craziness and longevity, you know, the fact that he's not a great promo has never, say, stopped him.
Right.
Well, like The Miz, who I think is a very good wrestler, and I think that he is awesome, but his strong suit, again, was his personality, his antagonizing, you know, behavior. When he was a baby face, people liked him because he talked a lot of shit to the heel. And as a heel, you know, he's as annoying as they can be. The problem I had with them putting the belt on him was he's been booked so poorly for 6 or 8 months that – there isn't like, oh my goodness, The Miz just won the belt. This is going to be awesome. It was kind of like, ugh, this guy hasn't, like, he literally probably hasn't won more than a match in, you know, 6 months.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like he's losing to Elias and all these mid-card guys, and even loses the, you know, the cash in the case. Oh, he gets it back, whatever. And I understand what they were doing. I would say if there was no pandemic in the world, that The Miz would have not won the championship.
Right.
I personally believe they put it on Lashley. And I guess if they can get Brock, great. But I assume the idea is for Drew to wrestle Lashley at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
And even though Drew's won the belt twice, he never won it in front of a crowd.
Right.
And now with they're going to say about 30, I would assume if the Super Bowl in Tampa had 33,000 fans, why couldn't the WrestleMania have 33,000 fans?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So it's like, I personally think that they want to see Drew McIntyre win the title in front of a crowd and now see how the reaction is.
I totally agree. I've
never seen, it's like, he's one of my favorite dudes, but it's like, is he over to where, you know, generally you could tell if somebody's over. You know, you go to our show, you knew Funny Bone is over. You know Remy Marcel is over. You know Jay Vidal is over. You know, as over as Hyper Streak is, he kind of gets drowned out because Remy Marcel is more popular.
Right.
You know what I mean? You can tell these things. You know, Cutthroat Cody and Jake, Death Proof, they're over, you know? Yeah. And the crowd responds to them, whether there's 30 people there, 100 people there, or 5,000 people there. You know, the popular guy is the popular guy. So it's probably extremely hard to see where Drew lies in terms of successful champion.
Right.
You know, it's like, I always joke, like, wow, Drew McIntyre is, you know, he's him being the champion, like, he's worse than Diesel. You know, he draws less fans any champion in the history of the WWE. And, you know, it's a joke and all, but it's like, we don't know if is he Diesel? Is he right. Hulk Hogan?
Right.
You know, in this day and age, the ratings suck. The buy rates are lower. There is none because of the network. Like, other than TV deals, the only way to dictate if WWE is successful is how much money they made.
Right.
But before, they could make money, but people would have the chink in the armor. Yeah, but WCW is beating them. Yeah, but their house shows are down.
Right.
But now, like, yeah, you know, we signed a deal to make $1 billion to be on the Peacock network. And we're getting rid of our own network, which actually cost us money. So even if we made money, we right. still had a lot of money to pay out. So, again, that's my thoughts on what they want to do, you know, because I remember like a year and a half ago, they were talking about Lashley and Drew, and they never pulled the trigger, and they just moved on.
Yeah.
And then he got involved with some things, and, you know, thankfully for Shelton Benjamin, MVP put the Hurt Business together because the only time he would watch Shelton Benjamin was on Main Event or something.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very interesting what they've been doing. And I think you're absolutely right, because even myself, I'm not a huge Drew fan right now. And a lot of it has to do with the fact is I don't know. Is it something that I like or something that I don't like? And I think that that's a great point. In front of a crowd, if he wins the title, will that make me feel something because the crowd has something? Or if the crowd shits all over it, holy mackerel.
You know, the thing is, he's been champion for so long during the pandemic, they may turn on him just because of that.
Uh-huh.
Like, if he was wrestling Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania like he did in front of 35,000 people and beat Lesnar's ass that quickly, the crowd would have went bonkers.
Yep.
But didn't have that opportunity. And it's definitely not going to be that way with Lashley, because that's also the problem. So you transition the belt to The Miz. Well, if you wanted Lashley to be the long-term champion, you would think that he would have beat Drew for the title.
Right.
Now, I guess they could save it and wanted to do Lashley versus Drew and really push Lashley moving forward. You know, and again, they can do a million things. Me on the outside looking in, you know, this would be my thinking of why they might do stuff like that.
Right.
You know, but it's like yesterday, you know, I caught the tail end of it, but everybody put over, you know, what a great match it was between Drew and Sheamus, you know. And the problem is that since Sheamus has come back, it's like they have a lot of big guys, Braun Strowman, like guys that when they were hot, they turned him down a notch.
Yeah.
And now we're supposed to be excited about him. Like, Sheamus came back and there was nothing exciting about his return. Big dude, great wrestler. He can talk, you know, but there's so many of these guys that get pushed and then they're stopped. Then they're pushed and then they're stopped. It was like similar to Wade Barrett. Every time he got over, they decided to kill the gimmick and work on something else and then get over again. And then he disappeared because he was tired of, hey, Bad News Barrett was over as fuck.
Yeah.
And then they just kind of stopped pushing it. And, you know, it's got to be disappointing. And that also goes into the fact of having too many wrestlers, you know, on the roster.
Yep. You know, speaking of that, let me ask you this. Do you think that with the with the way things ended up in the 90s with the Monday Night Wars, and essentially with Raw even being started, you saw the elimination of enhancement talent matches for basically using guys who are great talent, but using them almost in an enhancement type role a lot of times. And Apollo Crews is a great example of being used like that often. Was it, and is it stronger for the buildup of characters by feeding them, you know, no names or, you know, people that, you know, are maybe just breaking into the company? Does it make more sense to use that formula of, you know, what the territories did for years? And that is, you know, having those guys who will essentially lose a match because you're building up certain guys.
You know, I remember when we were first putting together everything, Mike Modest was talking, and he was a big fan of those matches, and I wasn't.
Okay.
You know, and he explained it to me, and now as I've, you know, learned in this business and been around for years, I 100% agree with him. Because the problem is, when I said, you know, a guy like Hiro Lu, here's a kid, big boy, crowd responds, high impact, and then all of a sudden he wrestles a 50-50, 60-40 match with a guy like Brandon G, who's half his size, who hasn't won matches. You know, this guy could be the best wrestler of all time down the road. But right now, his job is as an enhancement talent to make Hiro Lu look like $10 million, not $1 million. And we've learned that with a lot of these guys, we have to dictate everything they're going to do. Because if we don't, hey, I train with him, I like him, he's a nice guy, let me give him a little something. And of course, even though I said I needed to be a squash match, the young kid's always going to want to get his shit in. And if Hiro Lu's going to let him, he's not going to be like, no, 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 Joe wants me to get thumped by you, and that's what's going to help. Now, some guys will, and those are the ones that climb the ranks later on,
right?
Because they do exactly what you need them to do. You know, Chris Bay got murdered by Funny Bone in the first match he did, you know? And it's like, this is where you're at, and this is what you need to do. So when it comes to that, you need to establish a character. So back in the WWF days, after the jobber days, you know, there was the Barry Horowitzes, and my time was like Johnny Rods and Baron Miguel Seclusa. Like, those were the jobbers that was like tier two for, you know, the guy they brought in, because those guys would get some offense. But there was the tier one guys that would walk in, and whether it was the Road Warriors or Earthquake or any of these guys, Bad News Brown, their debut would never be more than like a minute and a half.
Yeah.
And the guy might get one punch in and that would be it. And he would murder him. And as time progressed, then WWF became very good at producing vignettes. So when Edge was coming in, you saw this guy for 2 months and was looking forward to his debut, who then beat the shit out of a guy pretty quickly.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of those guys were like that. And it's perception is the first thing in professional wrestling that the fans are going to get behind. If you're perceived as a loser, then you're a loser. You know, when I remember when WWEF, I don't even know what it was at the time, when they had the APA. Okay, they were a badass tag team, but they were a tag team. That's what Bradshaw was. He was a tag team wrestler. Then magically, he became the Wall Street Tycoon, JB. And that was fine because he's a great talker. He's a big dude. And what killed me was that he never even had a chance to get over. And within like a month, he beat Eddie Guerrero for the championship.
Right.
And everybody's kind of like, oh, my God, JBL, blah, blah, blah. You know, 8 months later, JBL was one of the best bad heel champions of all time. But he had to grow into that role. Imagine how big a deal it would have been if he would have gotten the old, you know, Macho Man, Bad News Brown, Ravishing Rick Rude, where they would come in and kill people for a while.
Yeah.
Like, they just had to jump and be like, oh, yeah, this is a great character. You're going to win the belt. Like, we didn't even know what his character was.
Right.
And, you know, how do you establish that? And, you know, it's kind of difficult. Like, when you listen to WWE now and there's really nobody there, you know, you can say whatever you want about the screens and the people there. It's not the same atmosphere.
Right.
You know, it's like, you know, in March we have the option probably to do a couple of those empty arena shows, which we probably will, and it'll be some good stuff. But even though it's empty arena, we're going to have the students there because they can be, and they're going to cheer like wrestling fans. Yeah. Because you want to have a reason to cheer for somebody. You want to have a reason to boost somebody. And I don't care how good of an actor you are when you're used to performing in front of people. I just don't think the intensity in a promo or in anything that you do can be the same as if you wrestled in front of a crowd.
Yeah.
So, yeah. You know, it's been a crazy world, you know, in this past year, and it's crazy that it's been a year, but it's like, you know, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, who rises from the ashes. Because one thing that we had in Vegas, the Southwest, we were way bigger than everybody else. We did shows at Sam's Town. We did shows at the Silverton. We did shows at Mesquite. Now we're doing shows in basically the same arena type that anybody else can do.
Right.
You know, our talent is first and foremost, you know, better than almost everybody's, but to the outside fan that we're trying to draw in Pittsburgh and Minnesota and all over the United States, you know, when they tune in and they see a show live from Sam's Town and they're like, hey, wow, that's where Ring of Honor runs. Hey, that's where Impact runs. Guess what? FSW is put on their level.
Right.
And not by watching Bret the Threat versus Nick Xander, but by watching Chris Bay versus Phoenix versus Douglas James, or by watching Hammerstone versus Sami Callihan, while watching a Kevin Cross. Oh, shit, that guy's a regular on FSW. Chris Bay, oh, Funny Bone's awesome, you know, yeah. And all these guys. But that's the worst part of it, where we haven't been able to produce those shows. And as good as the FSW arena is, again, it's better than anybody else who's running in a warehouse,
right.
You know. But the bottom line is, it's not spectacular to somebody who's watching a Impact production, a Ring of Honor production, a New Japan production, and a WWE production, you know, even, you know, as it is. So, you know, we need things to get going. And like right now, we have to scramble. We got to find a new facility. You know, we're not guaranteed to be back at Sam's Town because everybody we dealt with supposedly doesn't even have a job there.
Yeah.
So who knows what that's going to be like? We were killing it at the Silverton. We had the biggest crowd we ever had. And the new management, we were able to do the one more show that they didn't even want to do. And we figured, oh, we're in now. There's no way they're going to turn us down. And it's like, yeah, we're not interested in these types of shows anymore. And it's like, what types of shows do you mean? The ones that actually have a fucking crowd? The ones that you even, it's like, you didn't even pay us, but you pay Juice Newton $10,000 and get 500 seat fillers that you couldn't even get for her because nobody cared.
Yeah.
And because the bottom line is, you want people in the building.
Yep.
Well, we had 800 people in the building for Alberto Del Rio and Hammerstone, and Jeff Cobb was on that one, and Moose. And that was a monster show, but they did not give one shit. And it was like they were more concerned with doing Kin Sierra, and it's like, those are great. You know, we're not asking for 35 dates a year. Yeah. You're telling me we are not capable of having six shows or four shows in your building, bringing in a, you know, demographic, because we're not a show that parents bring their 9-year-olds. We have some, but the majority of our fans are 18 to 45, who, if you want to say wrestling fans who have no money, they just paid $150 for four front row tickets.
Yeah.
And, you know, the family of four also bought the $50 meet and greet package with Matt Hardy. So don't tell me they have no money.
Yeah.
You know, but it's that stigma of trying to get people who don't like wrestling to believe in wrestling.
Yeah.
Because it's so brow to them. Oh, wrestling. It's like, yeah, look at who the biggest star in Hollywood is. A fucking wrestler, The Rock. Even Batista's gotten huge. John Cena's in every commercial.
Yep.
So yeah. The success of wrestling, like, if I ran a UFC show and wanted to go to the Silverton, I'm charging you like $100,000. I'm charging you, the building, $100,000 for us to be there.
Right. Right.
I'm going to go into your building, and all I want to do is take the door, and you're going to get not only the food and beverage that averages $4,000 on a two-hour show.
Yep.
Where would you make that $4,000 in your casino? Now you have to have 800 people, 700 people, 500 people in your casino. Sam's Town, old people's casino, a bingo's casino to people.
Yep.
Okay? So now go into TGIF's after our show. Not only are there going to be fans there, but the wrestlers are going to spend the money I gave them because they're so overpriced, and they're going to eat there.
Yep.
So on a Sunday night when we did a show, there'd be 30 wrestlers. A lot of times I'd go. I remember going with Hoyt and the Scum and Brian Cage. And believe me, Brian Cage don't eat $10 worth of food. Okay? So all the money that they made from that, you know, and then and they're looking at their side, well, you know, they're a leased outlet and blah, blah, blah. Well, leased outlets need to make money.
Yeah.
So I bet they're pretty excited when they know we're going to do a show that night compared to a Sunday night when there's three motherfuckers in the place. You know?
Yeah.
But it's like, I don't want to dictate. Oh, it's a four wall. It's a four wall. You know, whatever you brought in, you know, the cost for labor. And it's like, okay, well, we had 800 people. If you don't think 80 people threw in $50 total over that time between eating and stuff. So take that 3,000, 4,000 in liquor sales and add another 4,000.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And it's like, but they don't want to do that because it makes us look good.
Yep.
And they want to act like, and I always remember when we would have Hardy or we have big numbers, he'd be like, oh yeah, but the gross sales isn't the net sales. And it was like, no matter what number we had to reach, like it was never, man, you guys had a great show. You killed it today. We all did well. It was always the favor that they did for us. Everybody does us the favors.
Right.
No, do nothing for nobody. It's like their fucking crew should give us Christmas cards because they got paid a lot of money to watch our crew do most of the work.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, setting up the bleachers. Well, we're supposed to assist them. Not we all do. And you say, hey, move that there, move that there. All the physical labor was done by us.
Yeah.
So we bring to the table way more. You know what? Of course, Ring of Honor pays you more. They pay you that much and you handle everything.
Yeah.
Well, we're discounted and we couldn't afford it. So we're still making you guys money and we do everything we can to help facilitate everything getting done. You know, even after the show, taking down the trussing and all that other shit.
Right.
Not really contracted to do that, but we want to stay in good graces. We want to show them our value, so we're willing to do way more than anybody else is.
Yeah.
And unfortunately sometimes that doesn't get appreciated.
Yeah. You know, it's stunning. And I think you made a great point.
Yeah.
Because Sam's Town, I rarely ever go there unless, you know, it's called for. So Sam's Town never gets my money unless there's a show going on and I go to watch the show. I'm going to drop $20, $50, $100 in their machines. And yeah, I mean, that's money they wouldn't have gotten, because why would I ever go there, you know, otherwise going to a show? Just makes no sense. As we wrap up this week, you know, now that you have a little bit of time and you guys are going to be trying to figure out where you might be running the upcoming shows past the 15th, and you know what you're going to have to do. Is there anything that sticks out to you as a priority in terms of when you're trying to figure out something like this, when you're handed a curveball? What do you look for in terms of, you know, reaching out to other places or trying to, do you even look at like Arizona or Utah, or, you know, what is it that, you know, when you can't have the business model here, what is it can you do to, you know, make a show happen, especially when you got a show technically coming up in a couple of weeks that should be huge?
Well, you know, MK's got a lot of connections in Utah. That's where he's from. He's actually got an office of his company in St. George. So we're looking at that. But I'm just not sure that doing that show there is beneficial to us.
Right.
I think doing a show there is beneficial to us, but I'm not sure if it's that show. Same thing in Arizona. So who's supposed to market it for us? You know, if I'm relying on my fans, our fans, to come down there, well, I don't think 40% of our fans are going to drive an hour to St. George.
Yeah.
They probably will compared to Arizona, but they're not going to all come out in droves. We did shows in Mesquite. We saw a good turnout, you know, people who wanted to make a weekend of it and things like that. I'm not sure how exciting it is to make a weekend of St. George. I've never been there, so I just know it's near Mesquite. And I guess if you like, you know, I don't know. It's the end of March, so I'm pretty sure there's not going to be skiing there either, because it's in Mesquite. So it's like, you know, probably going to be pretty warm. You know, I guess if you wanted to go to the Casablanca and hang out, cool, we could probably get you some room deals, you know.
Right.
But crowd-wise, you know, and the other thing takes into effect, we have a great FSW arena. I'm going to go and pay $1,000, $1,500, $2,000 to go into a facility that has none of the lighting we have, none of the video screens we have. And the only advantage is we can throw in a few more people.
Yeah.
It makes it really difficult to, A, turn a profit, and or even break even. And now the footage that we got is far less than if we filmed it in our own place.
Right.
So the question becomes, is it more cost effective to run an empty arena show at the FSW arena and try to do like an Indiegogo GCW thing where, you know, our fans are pretty pissed off about it. I think they'll support us. But again, we have that smaller fan base than, say, a GCW. Right. But will it be sufficient enough to, say, run a show? The wrestlers are going to be extremely disappointed to run that big show in front of nobody. But to run a regular show, I think everybody would be for it. Now, again, the question becomes cost-effective-wise. I'm not going to go travel and go do a show at the Space, because you could do it outside. Inside would be too small.
Right.
So you do it outside, they have lights. Well, they have lights that are overhead lights, and you're going to pay a lot of money to set up there, spaced out seating, to maybe get 100 people. I'm not sure 100 people will even pay for the rent, let alone for the talent.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's like, you know, I want to. But the question is, can we?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, I think that give a great look at what, you know, is going on, what you're having to deal with. And, you know, I think one constant in this is the fact that the fans are still supportive, you know, in everything that you guys are doing. So that's wonderful. And if people are listening and watching and enjoying hearing Joe's stories, please support FSW by, you know, purchasing the network. You know, such a great library on there. And, you know, just realizing that companies during this time, it's not like, you know, the WWE where, you know, they can afford stuff and write off stuff and et cetera, et cetera. This is a small business that needs support, and hopefully people around the world who might be seeing and discovering FSW, you know, is able to tune in and find the network. So, you know, knock on wood, everything goes to plan, and hopefully by, you know, mid-March, there'll be no more hassle. Until then, man, I think that fans just got to stick in there and support and make sure that, you know, they know that they're also really appreciated by future stars of wrestling. Joe, any final words?
Not much. You know, we're trying to abide by everything. We're trying to get things going. You know, we're going to be doing stuff sooner than later unless, you know, numbers plummet. Like, again, every day I look, you know, just last, in a week, it's gone from, you know, 9.6 positivity to 7.6. Well, you can't use the excuse, well, you know, they was only allowed 25%. Now we're allowed 35%. Guess what? The numbers are still plummeting. Right. So why do we got to wait till the 15th to get to, you know, 50%? Why can't we get a press conference and says, you know what, starting tomorrow, we're trying to open up these businesses. You guys are doing, we get punished for doing a mediocre job, but we don't get rewarded for doing a great job.
Right.
And again, what's the job? I'm doing exactly the same thing I did before, as is everybody. Oh, you have to wear your mask. Well, I can't go into the fucking store without a mask. So what are you telling me that I have to do different? Right. I'm doing everything I got to do. If I go in the casino, I got to wear a mask. If I go into the grocery store, I got to wear a mask. You know, when I go to the grocery store, I can't smoke a cigarette and drink. And, you know, I'm going to take one of my buy drinks and go into Smith's and start walking around and drinking it and see if it's okay. Guess what? They're going to say it's not okay. But in a casino, it is. In a restaurant, it is. Yeah. So everybody is doing the same thing. So if things are going down, that means whether it's the vaccine, you want to credit all your stuff, that's great. But the bottom line is the numbers have gone down so much that those numbers are, you know, similar to when we were sitting at home all the time.
Right.
We weren't allowed to go out, you know, a 7.6. It wasn't even that high then. So it's lower now. So can we open things up? You know, why do we got to wait till May 1st for them to say, okay, Clark County could decide, the city of Las Vegas could decide, it's going to go to the local authorities. Right. Well, everything's gone down March 15th. Why can't we do it on April 1st? Why do we got to wait another 45 days? Like, yeah. You know, it's going to be warm enough on April 1st that people want to do things. So I'm going to go in the pool. Am I not allowed to swim near somebody? Like, do I have to keep a 6-foot distance of swimming next to someone? You know, like, I don't understand some of the stuff, and it's not really made clear on, you know, things are. So I could be in my office, and if there's two people there and one's on one side and one's on the other in my own office, I still have to wear a mask. Yeah. I don't understand.
Yeah.
You know, and nobody's made it clear. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's something that we're all dealing with is the just the uncertainty of what it is exactly we're supposed to be doing outside of just wearing a mask and, you know, social distancing. But the whens are a good question.
More importantly, we got a lot of great talent.
Exactly.
And unfortunately, they've been stifled by what they've been allowed to do. Another thing about the show Saturday, a mystery partner for the Unguided was Sin Bodhi, and I really liked their dynamic together, by the way, which could to future things.
Yeah, I think that would be amazing, especially, you know, how great, you know, that whole operation, you know, clicked. I think that it would be very interesting. And it would be great to finally one day have them together a little bit and then see a turn and have to see Damian Drake and Sin Bodhi and Matt Vandegrift in a three-way. That would be worth the while because, you know, Matt Vandegrift is taking a bump that no one... That kid is insane. It's so fun to watch.
Yes, it is.
All right, everyone. Thanks again for listening, and we will see you next time. Take care, everybody.